Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, all kind of put together and trying to describe things that maybe you haven't thought of before. If you heard last week's show, which I hope some of you have, then you know that tonight we're going to be dealing with spiritual service in the afterlife, and it's going to be part two because last week was part one. Now, for some of you who did hear last week's show, I hope you will remember that it really got into some, we'll say, down-to-earth levels, although this is certainly not Earth we were talking about, not in the physical sense. It's a part of Earth, but a dimensionally not the same as where we live. And I hope that I achieved the intended goal, which was to give people a kind of feel, more than just a thought, of what it was like, what it is like, to live in the more spiritual realms of the astral world. For some people, they may have also gotten a picture of other parts of the astral world a little bit. Not that much, but a little bit. Tonight, we're going to go and move up another dimension, add another dimension to our understanding. That dimension actually is time itself, and I'll explain more about that in a minute. But I think it's important to just sort of get the idea here that we're moving back into becoming more and more a soul as we move higher in dimensionality, because the part of us we call us, our personal side, personality, is starting to feel, think, sense as more of its soul, as it gives up the illusionary sense that it gets from confused and usually selfishly, unfortunately, somewhat destroyed senses from self-focus in the lower dimensions. So as we give up our bodies, we actually naturally go back to a higher, more spiritual sense and a greater connection to our soul. That's designed that way. So it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. Some people say, well, I'm losing myself. No, you don't lose yourself at all. As a matter of fact, you gain more consciousness, so you gain self. What you lose is illusion. And illusion is not a great thing to have because it creates suffering and tremendous amounts of destruction to the form part of us and can interfere with the development of our spiritual side as well. So that's what's happening. We're moving in that direction. All right, so what is this mental world like, and why is that so different from the astral that I was describing to you in the higher two spiritual dimensions, some people call them planes, some people call them subworlds, of the astral world? How does it suddenly shift? Well, eventually people wear out, even if they're spiritually serving, they wear out their astral bodies. Nothing is going to last in the physical sense or in the energy sense forever. The energy sense is the kind of thing that was made to have a limitation in time, partly because energy itself has to become more spiritual in its own right. And when we borrow it and use it for the purpose of creating more of God or not, we are interfering to some extent with its own development. And so we can't do this indefinitely. Some people say, well, I want to live forever. Well, by nature, we all do live forever. But the difference is in different form as time goes by. And if you want to keep the same form, that's going to get ugly. And it doesn't work because the energy is more and more insistent on being free. Freedom is the first part of God's own thought. And nothing proves it more than the need and the eventual demand that energy puts on us, in our forms, and on everything around us, for it to eventually be detached from our own thought so it can gradually become spiritualized itself. This is something that really is interesting, and it's probably a great topic for another show. It shows how critically important freedom is, even for energy. Just amazing. Even at the most basic levels, freedom is number one. Okay, so let's then talk about the mental world. This is my more favorite thing to discuss. Not that I dislike the astral world. The astral world is a place where you become one with others through sharing the sense of feeling, you know, like the song Feelings. We can all sing it together. But the problem is that feelings are somewhat untruthful. They're subjective. They lack a completed sense of time. Now, what do you mean? What do I mean by sense of time? Well, when you feel something, you don't feel something that is in a continuous mode for some projected future element of your existence. So you feel how you feel at the moment, but you really can't feel how you're going to feel some distant or even near distant time in the future. And so the problem with feeling is that it's really based upon the present and somewhat, if we think about things, in the past. People say, well, I think about the future, and the future tells me that, you know, this is going to happen, that happens, and I get excited and I feel good, etc. Really, what that is creative imagination, but it is not the real feeling you're going to have at some point in the future, because how many times have you imagined something to feel a certain way sometime in the future, and it doesn't turn out that way? I would say a majority of divorces and other kinds of, we'll say, distasteful events that people go through happen exactly for that reason, because their creative imagination does not match the eventual outcome in feelings that they expect, people expect. So we can say feelings don't have innately within them truth. They have great effect, and they produce an element that's key to humans in terms of life and, we'll say, the experience of what we perceive as life. But feelings are not a way of determining the validity of anything. They are an important source of us nurturing and becoming close in certain ways with others. And we should never discount them. But moving on to the mental world, once a person wears out their astral body, the part of the astral body that senses in feelings, as I described last week. And for spiritual people, they share those feelings at a remarkable level that for some of you, you're still probably pondering some of the things I described. Because it takes a while to get what all that stuff means that I explained. However, the body itself, the astral body of a person, eventually wears out and or needs to be freed, both. And so what we call death of the body has to take place. That frees the consciousness to exist in its conscious focus on its last, we'll call it, form-type body that it can focus through, and it's called the manasic or mental body. This body is kind of split in two, and there's a lower part where the personality resides, and there's a higher part where the soul resides. Now, for the first time, the personality and soul are in the same dimension in terms of their focus of consciousness, and they're able to communicate much better because of that. Tremendous improvement. And that means we're much more soul-like. As soon as we go to the monastic world, the mental world, we're more like souls. Even if we were terrible people, while we were physically and maybe even sometimes while we were astrally alive, we usually turn out to be much better because our souls are, and we're much closer to those in the mental world. Also, we're closer to the, we'll call it the alter ego of our souls, sometimes referred to as the solar angel, but there's inner guide. There's a lot of words to describe this particular being that really is a collective kind of being itself. And strangely, it's an energy being. But it's in a very advanced energy being, more advanced than most humans ever are. Wow. But it helps our soul. And we're closer to it because the lowest part of its existence is at the very, very, very highest part of the monastic world, higher than where the soul actually is. So it's a little more difficult for us to have communication with this great being, especially when we're physically or astrally alive. But once we're mentally alive, the communication does work out pretty good, and much more of it is available. That allows human beings to develop more rapidly once they hit the mental world because they have some contact directly with their soul, and even more so in some cases, in a lot of cases, with their solar angel, the alter ego. So that's a really great thing. Now you can say, okay, well, that's nice, but what are you going to bring us down from the 30,000-foot level down to the right there? And yes, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do it again today. If you heard last week's show, expect more of it coming. I'm just starting off, though, sort of slowly here, because we're entering into a realm. If you thought the astral world was kind of strange, where you can actually, in a spiritual life, feel what thousands of other people are feeling, and you thought that was strange, wait, we're coming to another great change that's even more dramatic. And it's more like what the soul experiences. And for a lot of you, this is really an education on being a soul as much as it is living a spiritual life in another dimension of time and space. It's sort of like a combined thing is what you're going to hopefully be informed about. Okay, so someone eventually, all of us, except for evil people. Evil people kind of, they bypass the mental world because they don't want to know anything about truth. They stay in the lowest part of the astral world and some reincarnate from there. But they never go to the mental world because they don't want to be close to a soul that they've disavowed any connection with. And they don't want to be in any way connected to a soul or angel. And they certainly don't want to know anything more about truth. So they just say, forget it. I'm not signing up. And they actually do not go to the mental world. But they are the rare exceptions, the people who choose a path of darkness and evil. Whereas the rest of us are going to, by nature, go there, and it's just going to be wonderful, although it doesn't start off that way. This is the kind of contradiction. Because people are so arrogant and or egotistical, I should say more of the reverse, egotism is much more rampant than is arrogance. Arrogance is kind of like, I don't care about anybody, and I think I'm the greatest. Whereas egotism is just, I think I'm always right, but I may still care about people. Well, that's good. Okay. So that's a kind of a summation of these two. These conditions can last all the way through astral life, much less so for those seeking spiritual service. That's the good news. The bad news is there's usually some residual amount. It's because the personality in its own development seeks to be special, wants to be special, even when it knows better, like when it's a member of a spiritual group and serving in the higher two subworlds of the highest two subworlds of the astral dimension. Even there, people that are sacrificing 75% of their existence to service to others, that's a huge amount, and living virtually the life of a fourth level initiate, whether they are or not, they're living in that way. They're living like a great being. But the problem is that there's still this little 25%, you see, that likes to think it's special, likes to think it's really great, man. I was so wonderful. And it has a sense that it needs to be right more than it needs to give sacrifice the unselfish and loving. So that's its battle. And some of that remains. Now, how much, it depends on how much service someone does while they're alive astrally. If they do a great deal, and if they're really with it, and particularly if they practice a new type of mental yoga, but that's a probably not very common thing, the possibility is that they might not even go through what I'm going to describe to you. But for a number of even spiritually focused and really, we'll say, seriously serving spiritual, we'll call them disciplined people, those people go on to the middle world, and they sometimes and oftentimes spend some time in what is known as the mental akasha. What's a mental akasha? Well, some people think it's a book that you look into, and it tells you all about the stuff that you used to do in your prior lives and stuff. It's not a book, unless you think of it as a living kind of book or something like that. What it is it's time. See, you're living now in a full dimension of time. And the thing that's great and sometimes problematic about the mental world is that you can live, if you want and if you have to, in the past. Now, that's hard for us to understand. I'm not talking about thinking about things that used to happen. That's not living in the past. That's kind of like having a reverie about the past. But I'm talking about actually going back in time and reliving the times that you were egotistical and arrogant. Now, your astral body's gone, so you don't have to worry about how you used to be an obnoxious feeling kind of person, because that's over with. But how you thought was wrong at times. And those times are connected together by commonality of concept. So maybe you played out a whole different periods in your history, and it could be prior lives, by the way, so that really complicates it, that you did a certain type of thinking that caused you to cause others to be harmed and yourself, and it came from always self-focus, and because you wanted to be right and others were not as right as you, those times are connected together by the same concept of thought from the higher monastic world. Even though the concept itself is untrue, you wanted to believe it. And so these times can be separated by tens of years, thousands of years even, technically. But that's rare. Usually, if it's, we're just talking about the last lifetime you've been having, which is the most focus in the mental world, but you can go back and go back into prior lives before that. You're experiencing amazingly a rerun, but you're an active participant in the rerun. That is a little spooky. I'm not talking about reading a book about it or seeing a movie about it or even somebody, you know, drawing pictures and explaining. I'm saying you are actually there. And when you're there, you're not changing the past, because a lot of people talk, oh, well, that would screw up the universe, you're changing the past. Not exactly. You see, since you're living in time, time is a living thing. It can change there. But all you're doing, really, is you're making time better connected to the present and the future. This is hard to understand. You're not actually changing the past as much as you're correcting the present and the future. A little hard to understand, I know. I'll try to make it easier. Time is a real difficult thing for people to grasp. Okay, so, but let me go through the nuts and bolts, because that's what a lot of people really want to know about. Okay, you end up in the mental world, and let's say you got something that's still kind of nasty on a low level of thinking. Well, in the lower mental world, it's kind of divided up into sub-worlds, something like the astral world, but it's by more concept than it is by consciousness, although consciousness and concept is somewhat connected. So the lower level concepts, the concepts that deal with material form, are found in the lowest part of the mental world, called the seventh sub-world. And then things that involved feelings, but are not the feelings themselves. They involve feelings, but they are not the feelings. Those are not there. The feelings are in another dimension. But nonetheless, you can actually think about and experience yourself reacting with a feeling, even though you can't feel it at the moment, which really helps, by the way, because then you're more mentally focused. In those situations, you're more into the sixth sub-world of the monastic world. Then in the fifth sub-world, that deals more with the structure of things. And how basically, if we wanted to say it, how everything is put together in a material sense or a form sense. It's not material there, but it's form sense. So we're learning how the world actually functions in cause and effect. It's like science, isn't it? And that's the fifth sub-world. And finally, the last or highest sub-world of the lower monastic development is the fourth, where you're trying to join every element of time together. And you're trying to create a balance in how you relate to concepts so that the concepts themselves do not conflict. So that finally you have, and this, all these lower parts are called thought forms of thought. And finally, when you reach a balance of all the forms of thought, you have truth about forms of thought. And most people have a lot of untruth. So when you go to this lower mental world, you're living through all the parts of your last life and some prior lives that you thought something like that as well. So you could go back hundreds, even thousands of years and relive certain things. And you go and you literally, until you can communicate with anybody else, you're literally in a cocoon, you might say. Now, you can create a very nice environment that you're living in, but you're alone. And the reason you're alone is because your own senses, your mental senses, have been so self-focused that they aren't sensitive enough, once you get to the mental world, to be used to understand and communicate through thought with others that are free from this. So you have to free yourself from your mental illusion, which is mostly egotism and arrogance. Now, everybody goes through this. People who are doing spiritual service go through it very rapidly. They might spend 1 or 2 or 5% of the time that people on an average do. So you go through it very quickly, and that's a good thing. But what do you go through? Well, you might end up first thinking about the most, we'll say, grossest illusions you have and end up in the seventh sub-world. And you find yourself into this mental akasha, which is the past, reliving over and over again past thoughts that you had based upon erroneous concepts. And thought forms that you created from those erroneous concepts, where you're dealing with the people from your past and they are interacting with you. This is weird. Now you say, well, where are those people really? Well, they're part of your past. And the weird thing about this is the people can change the way they react based upon how you react. Are the people really there? Now, this is the part that's going to be hard to understand. I try to explain it as best as I can. Some of you are probably going to get frustrated about this. Okay. For the time that you're there, the people exist and are real. So you interact with them, and your sense of it is you're really there. And this is confusing to the personality. And the personality oftentimes does not realize it's in the mental world. It actually forgets. And it's semi, like you're not fully conscious, in other words. You're conscious in terms of what you're dealing with, but you're not conscious of the fact that you're possibly in the mental world and going back over this for the 50th time. And people are responding somewhat differently than they did the last time you did this. And the reason they're responding differently is because your thoughts are more truthful. And then their thoughts are more truthful. And the nature of the experience changes. Now you could say, well, what is this then? If this isn't real, I mean, if this isn't the real past, then what is it? And the best thing I can describe it to you as is the entire mental world is like a virtual reality machine. That's the best way I can describe it based upon now experience. And for those of you who want to know how I had this experience, et cetera, that's another discussion for another time, or you can listen to an earlier show where I've explained it. But the point is that you're in a situation in which what is happening to you is as real as when it really happened. But because time is segregated by your own untruthfulness, you've created a loop in time that is not connected to the real time of the universe. This is weird. And that loop of time you own as your karma. And you can go back in it as many times as necessary to get it to fit in with the truth of God and the truth of the universe. If you do that, it no longer is your karma. And that loop is no longer there. It becomes a part of a bigger truth that's being developed in the mental world, which makes it easier for you to think and for everybody else to think. Now, this is the weirder part, okay? What I'm telling you is that you're not really working just on your karma. I know that I made it sound like that. But you're also working on everybody else's. You are actually starting to become very functional as a soul. You are cleaning up the mess that you made. And in the process, everybody's thinking becomes clearer to some small extent by changing the way you thought in the past. In these loops of time that are created, that are kind of disconnected from time itself and are just hanging out there waiting for you to go back and me and everybody else to correct so that our egotism, and if we're arrogant, is not interfering with the function of God in the universe. Wow. And we're becoming closer and closer to God as we do this. I know, it sounds like, well, let's go make the movie, right? Because this is something science fiction really hasn't even come close to. But this is what it is. And what I'm describing is as close as I can get it in our vernacular. It may not be perfect because I don't know the correct words to use because it's something so unusual and different. But the best I can say is it's like a virtual reality. And there's another more positive side to this virtual reality, which we'll talk about. But for right now, this is the remedial side. And if you don't fix the remedial side, you can't get to the positive side of spiritual service. So before someone can serve in one of these lower subworlds, the seventh, the sixth, the fifth, or the fourth, in order to serve, you've got to clear all of the untruths in yourself that have contributed, therefore, to not only your own bane of existence, but has screwed up everybody else's thinking at the same time. We're all responsible for all the untruth that everybody suffers through. Are you with me on this? I hope you are. So there's an individual element, but there's a collective group element to it as well. All right, so how long do you spend there? I mean, you know, let's say you have 30 different objects connected together of lower mental form, coming from a common mistaken concept that may have taken place over two or three lifetimes and covers in total time to go through each one of the examples that this is a number of days of time to go through them when you collectively add all of them together. And that's what you do. You go from one to the next, even if they're a lifetime apart. So go, that's how it will go. It doesn't go sequentially by time. It goes only from the earliest, usually, to the latest, but there is no other time connecting it other than the commonality of the mistaken concept and mistaken, illusioned forms of thought that were created. Wow. Okay. Now you get some assistance, and let me tell you about the assistance. It's not all like you're on your own. First of all, we talked about the old solar angel. The solar angel communicates with people in this karmic experience when they come out of it. Sometimes, if they're thinking clearly, they are alone in a domain that they create out of their own thought, just instantly thinking they can be in the most wonderful environment, but they are alone. Now, why are they alone again? Because they can't communicate with other people who are also thinking selfishly. If they did, they would further split time, and they would be going backwards. So that isn't the purpose of what this experience is about. Instead, it's a kind of isolated, lonely period. For spiritually disciplined people, this could be just a matter of a few years to resolve all of this in terms of their life experience. But for other people, it could be centuries or longer. It can be grueling if you go to the monastic world and you have terrible mental illusions. But nonetheless, you have to go through it because it's your karma to change it back, to undo as much as you can. Okay, so, and you have to get yourself back to being a soul, which is the real underlying factor. So, you have some help, because when you come out of this experience, you're in a contemplative state, and you can think about the experiences you just had, and you know that they were these karmic experiences of Akasha rather than the real thing. But while you were there, usually the people are clueless. In other words, they think they're just there and for the first time experience it. Sometimes they have a feeling or sense of deja vu. No kidding. They may have gone over it 100 times. So, yeah, they do have that. But they don't remember that they're living in the monastic world until they come out of the Akasha. And then they're just, whoa, where am I? Oh, yeah, I'm here. That's right. And then they think about it. And they think about what they didn't do right, even though they may have gone over and over the same experiences a number of times. They go over, by the way, until the mental senses just completely fail. And once they fail, they can't go back into the Akasha until they recover or until they literally the mental body dies, which is another possibility. So this is the experience of life. And there's not only help from the solar angel. As a person starts really focusing on wanting to serve more, particularly for spiritually disciplined people, they have soul contact with their own soul, and they actually could gain a lot of, we'll say, important truth, understanding, whole knowledge, love, wisdom, there's lots of words for it, that will help them to complete the karmic journey without repetition. There's another thing that can be helpful. There are servers in the mental world, and that's where we're eventually going to get to, who have been through this experience, cleared it up for themselves, and now they're coming and trying to help those in the contemplative state afterwards to experience their own thoughts in a different way and to come to a greater truth. Actually, a philosophical and even more deep discussions with those inhabitants. So they're not completely isolated. But they're isolated from people who are at the same level with themselves, because these spiritual servers now have advanced themselves, and they're serving those who are having vast amounts of difficulties. And it's a fascinating thing, because if you think about it, those spiritual servers, maybe just a few years or decades before, were in the same position, you see, and someone helped them. It's a great thing. And one of the things that often happens in these scenarios is that in the beginning, some of the people who aren't usually that spiritually advanced, think that these are angels coming to help them. That's okay. Nobody cares what you think about them, really. And so they say, well, the angels are coming and helping me out. Okay, that's cool. Same sort of thing actually happens in the astral world when people from the spiritual subplanes go down to the lower ones. Oh, the angels have come. Yeah, because that they don't have an understanding of how the universe necessarily works. And their understandings come from conventional religious doctrines and stuff. But these are not angels, at least not in the biblical sense. These are people who are very advanced now and who have come out of this themselves and are trying to help those who haven't. And then finally, there's a few, a very, very few number of people who actually are living in the astral world, or even fewer who are living in the physical world, who when they sleep can serve in the mental world because they have cleared their mental body to an unusually high level, giving them access to the mental world. They usually have a teacher who's not physically alive and who's a member of the next kingdom, not part of the human kingdom, who somewhat is like their helper, and maybe sometimes even communicates and directs some of what they're doing. But most of what happens because, and I'm going to explain this about all the servers, because there's a need that a particular server can fulfill in common thought. Usually that server has found ways of overcoming the same problem, and they're attracted, literally, by common concept thought to those that they can help the best. Fantastic. Works great. And so this system is designed for those who are a little bit more ahead to help those who are a little bit behind and are coming up the ranks, so to speak, to do their spiritual service. They also help people who aren't necessarily going to do a lot of spiritual service in the mental world, but who have to get over their illusion to go back to being their souls. That's the vast majority of people. Very few people, relatively, serve in the monastic world. And even though it's rare in the astral world, it's even rarer in the mental world. Okay, so this is the fascinating thing about it. Service is really about overcoming the disjointed time elements of past, present, and future, and particularly the Akashic energies that are really kind of blocked out of connection with other forms in the mental existence. They're kind of like almost dangling out in nowhere and that are not well connected. Because the minds of human beings are pretty powerful, and they have a great effect on the lower mental world, more so than any other being. They affect the lower mental world. And so to try to correct them at lower mental world so it doesn't go to evil, because that's one of the great concerns, there's a necessity to, as much as possible, resolve these conflicts. Now, also, with the permission of the person, this is kind of weird, once someone serves or helps someone, another person, in their contemplative state, they usually ask for not permission for just themselves, but for any other server to help them the next time they go into the Akasha. When granted that permission, then any server can enter into the experience with with the person going through their Akashic illusions. And that person can take on the identity of anybody they want, something almost like the Matrix, but in a more positive way than happened in the Matrix, if you saw that movie or those movies. And they can also alter, if necessary, what's happening, because their thought is so much stronger. Now you can say, well, why would you want to alter what is already illusion thought about the past? Well, you know, sometimes changing the position in a mental sense of the person who's being egotistical has a great effect on their ability to become humble humility is really the key answer to resolving the problem. Sometimes you make scary situations or difficult ones or problematic that the person has to overcome. And so this is done, again, with a general slip of permission, you might say, but not directed towards any individual because the servers cannot stay with one person. One person may serve one time, another person another. The servers have to go when they're available and when needed and that sort of thing. But the good news is that there's continuity because what one server did is immediately impressioned on and available to any new server, so they know all how all the other servers have been doing. And if you get a really good server in there with someone, then their work doesn't go wasted because others pick up and say, oh, well, that's a good way to go about it. Let's try that. Yeah. So very quickly, things in the mental world change much more than what we're used to. And the forms can change almost instantly just based upon a server's thought who's helping someone because their thought is so much more powerful as soon as they're unillusioned than is the thought of the person who's illusioned. That's what's wrong with their thought. It's weak and it's causing problems. Whereas you go in there with clear thought and it's your show. Whatever the server thinks is going to be what is going to take. Now, they do play by some rules. That's why their servers from the astral and the physical worlds, who serve usually when they're asleep, of course, they're awake. They're awake in those other worlds, their body's sleeping. But they have to have some help from others because they're so powerful, they got to be careful that they don't screw up what other work has been done because they're still in a very illusioned body. And so there's things that maybe a couple times a year they're overall tutored about so that they do this job with the best possible success involved. And it's a great experience. This is a wonderful experience. Now, let's just stay with the servers in the mental world. Servers in the mental world actually communicate with each other continually. They develop very close bonds with each other. They do not, these same servers do not have much of a relationship with those servers from the other lower dimensions because they're not there consistently enough. But among themselves, they build a great alliance and they are continuously working on improving the situation. You know, I've gone way over on my time here, but I've gone over by a few minutes. So I got so engrossed in this thing. This is really where I shine, you can say. But we do need to take a break, and I hope that the people who have been waiting for me to say that have been patient. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We are back. I don't know if you heard me the first time or not. We had a little, again, because I kind of went over there, kind of confused everybody in the engineering room, et cetera. Okay, so we're back, and I'm going to just continue because I think this is a subject that easily could be several shows, but I want to get as much in as possible, and that's probably why I went so far past our break time. Okay, so The cool thing about this is that there's a continuity in service, even though actually different servers are serving different people at different times. And it's really interesting that the mental world you can do this in, that you wouldn't be able to really do it here. And that's because once you join time, it takes no time to think. You gain enormous amounts of information in very, very, very fractional parts of time, well, virtually no time. And so you can do these amazing things that we're talking about. Okay, so let's talk about people after they get out of this state. We are finally, they've joined their mental senses, the lower mental senses, together strong enough, and they're working well enough so that they can communicate with other servers and other people living in the middle world. Now they're living a life that is truly a, we'll say, a life of mutual enjoyment and creation. And they are able to traverse all four of the lower subworlds. They are, at that point, they also have fairly consistent communication with both their soul and solar angel. And they spend part of their time helping those who are in the mental akasha. Many of them are not spiritual servers. They're just folks who need to clear up their mental illusion. They also, though, start spending a good deal of their time in the future, doing things that their soul is doing in the higher mental world on a concept level. So they're doing it more on a form or thought form level. Now, what they're doing is they're taking some of the concepts that they're getting from their souls, and they're actually creating a world of forms out of them and seeing how they can interact in a future life together, because that's what the soul is very much concerned with, the next lifetime, not the one that those people are in. And the remarkable part about this, these are virtual realities again, is they can play out years of time, in much less time actually, to see how a new kind of personality that they may contribute to over time with to their soul, will relate with other personalities on a form level, dealing with the physical form and the astral form and mental form altogether. And so they're actually creating future worlds. You get to enjoy the experience of what possible future worlds will be like. Now, this is usually associated with the planet that they're on. Sometimes it's not, but most of the time it is. Because a few of these servers may actually leave the service of Earth. Most of them are not, though. And so the thing that's really neat about this, and the reason I'm kind of excited about it, because I haven't yet experienced it firsthand, is that these folks are living in futures of new inventions, new ideas, new ways of living that are just remarkable. But here on Earth, they aren't definite because they are virtual realities, but they are potential realities because they create them. And the experience of living in them is so exciting that I would really like to do that myself. But you can't do it unless you have gotten rid of all of the mental illusion in the physical, or not physical, in the form part of the mental body. And it's very difficult to do that until you're actually alive in the mental world. Some people manage it once they get to the astral world and serve there for a long time. Nobody I know, nobody I've ever heard of, has been able to do it yet from the physical world and still be alive physically. But nonetheless, just think of the excitement of this. Thousands of different futures that you get to actually live through and experience in parts, the parts that you find most interesting and that you can contribute the most to. Parts of the future where you create new things and you see how they might help or hurt, how informs now others. The soul is not so concerned about the forms. The soul is going to take this information when you rejoin with it and join it with its concepts and make sure that they two work together. The soul doesn't pay attention to the forms because it allows its counterpart, the coming human rejoining, to do it itself in the lower mental world. Wow. Okay, so in this process you gain close relationships, closer than I can ever describe, because you're co-creating new futures on a regular basis with these people that you're going to likely incarnate with. This isn't everyone you will incarnate with, but a lot of these people you will be incarnating with. And you're trying to build up a relationship where you can co-create together. Now, this is the neat thing about spiritual groups. If you join a spiritual group, it's likely that the people you will encounter in that spiritual group will be the people that you did this with in the mental world. Now, there's an exception to this. If you led a wayward, this undisciplined life as a spiritual person in a prior lifetime, you may prevent yourself from experiencing those people until you overcome it in the physical world. But that's a whole karmic problem that has to be dealt with by some people. But for the average person, they experience a lot of the people that they were doing this with in the mental world, and sometimes those are the same people they co-served with in the spirit, in the astral world. Wow, you see what's happening. You're becoming more and more creative in an individual while you're becoming more together in one with thousands. And you're experiencing new realities, some of which will not work out, at least for Earth. But they can be borrowed by other planets, by the way. People on other planets and other worlds that are sacred can come to our planet and get information that we have created. We can't do it with them because we're not sacred. But someday we might be able to. It's a great, great advantage. You then a vista of millions of worlds open to you that you can choose from to help you be a creator. It's like having a whole new toolbox that is the size of the universe. But until you're a sacred planet, that toolbox is unreachable. And it's unfortunate. Earth is far from a sacred planet right now, so we don't have that toolbox even for our own use in the monastic part of life. But, as I said, others can use what we come up with, which is always a neat thing. And that's another fascinating part of how this experience works out. Now, does everybody have a taste of this? Most people. Some people wear out their mental bodies. These are not spiritual servers, though. To the point where they really almost never have much awake time in the mental world. They're going to suffer, unfortunately. They're going to be the least creative, the least inclusive people when they become reincarnated in a new personality. It's going to be more difficult for those folks. That's why the struggle is on to save the world through the mental world by servers getting people to become unillusioned fast enough and retain some of their mental senses, they at least have a mental life, which gives them a much better opportunity for their next incarnation. Remember, the soul can't make up for the form side. So if the thought forms are screwed up because of egotism and arrogance, the soul really can't correct that. The soul can only correct concepts. And those are very abstract. Those are the things that I usually talk about, and people say, well, can you give us some examples? You know, that's the problem. And humans really need both. Souls don't, but humans do. In the lower worlds, forms take precedent because there's so much dense energy. Even lower mental energy is so dense in comparison to higher mental energy. The forms take precedent. So we have to make sure that we have people that are going through these experiences that aren't so arrogant and egotistical that they're not going to move ahead. Right now, Earth is in a tenuous problem. This moment in time is the most crucial I know of, because the greatest amount of egotism has grown in humanity. Because of the nature of things called rays and where they're focused on our planet and our race itself. We're the fifth sub of the fifth race. And everything is so mentally focused that it's more important for people to be right than to be anything else, including humble and loving. And so this is our problem. This is leading to a lot of the darkness and evils that we contend with on a daily basis. And this is what's being fought by those who are spiritually serving in the mental world, the lower mental world. So there's a great impetus to correct the problem there. So in the next generation, there will be an improvement. How well we're doing? Well, so far I would say it's holding its own. But it isn't growing at the rate it should. Too many people die very egotistical and arrogant. And too many people die from the astral world. So there's still some of that within them, enough to cause them to not gain enough mental life. And to spend inordinate times in the Akasha, in remedial issues of their own creation. Okay, enough of that negative. Let's go to the positive side again, because I like that. Okay, so someone who's serving is usually serving from what is called the fourth subworld. That's the highest part of the form subworld. They usually live in an environment in which they have two different existences. Let me try to describe them to you so you understand them. Some might claim it to be three, though. Some of them might claim it to be three. But I'm going to describe it from my perspective, and I'll say it from what I've heard from others. From my perspective, the two existences are, besides their service in the Akasha, that's a separate thing now, That's something else. They do some of that. But they also live in a present sense, enjoying the existence of, we'll say, moving into becoming their soul. A lot of what their focus is in the present sense. I mean, remember, everything is time-related in the mental world, so I can't leave time out. Is their focus is on how much are they becoming a soul, how much are they helping all others to do that, because they don't see it on an individual level. They can't become a soul by themselves becoming a soul and others not. Everybody's got to kind of work on this together. And so they spend a lot of their time doing that, but in the process, they love each other at levels that I cannot describe. It's so far beyond the levels of love that we think of as love, who are alive physically right now, that the love is because they really experience each other completely, all of their thoughts and thought forms. They don't hide any thought or thought form from anyone else. All of what they think is shared. Some of what they think is unique, and other things that they think, and in the present tense, are collectively found to be the most useful. This is a unique kind of existence. The love is the continual giving of forms of thought to all others who need it, and helping to clarify their concepts at the same time. This is a continual state. Very little sleep takes place. They do sleep. And the other side of it is, the other part that I see, is that they, at the same time, can be existing in these virtual realities of future. And then they experience new personalities of themselves and others. And these new personalities are different from the present sense of them, present tense sense of themselves. And this can get confusing, and I know that some of you are scratching your heads. But they still always know that they are them. It's just that they are them trying on different suits of clothes. And the clothes interact and have great love and affinity for all other suits of clothes of all other people that they are co-serving with. I hope I'm making some sense here. Okay. But there is a third part that some have told me about, but I haven't experienced it, so I can only tell you what my understanding is of it. And the third part has to do with God. And this is a really different perspective, so if I lose you on it, it's probably because I'm lost myself. Okay. And that is, because they're joining all three parts of time in truth and in love and wisdom together, the past takes on a totally different realm to these people. And it actually shows to them the mind of God in their mind moving in a direction that is collectively creating the universe. Now, what does that mean? It means that apparently, now this is the part that I'm not totally understanding myself, apparently what we think of as the past is not, there is no past. The past is really coming from the future, and there's some part, recently, there's parts of physics that proves this to be true. I know this is hard to believe. Not metaphysics, but physics. The past is, by something called a tachyon and other crazy particles that do strange things. But, and it has to do with particles that also are anti-particles, of a sense. But at any rate, without getting too deep into that part of science, what is taking place, apparently, is every creative act by all living things in the universe recreates God, not in the future, but also in the present and the past. I just want you to ponder on that one, because I don't fully understand it either. But the point is that those few who have, I've had some communication with, that are experiencing this, have universally explained it, something like what I just said, as best as I can explain it. And I'd certainly like to try to figure out, and then also have the experience more than figure it out, what that really is, because I'm not totally understanding the experience of it, because I've never experienced it in this lifetime. I'm sure I have in prior lifetimes, but of course I don't remember that those things from those lifetimes at this time. Okay, so these people are experiencing this universality of God itself. Not just them being loving and close, etc. They're experiencing God's growth. Okay? A sense of God's growing. But not just in the future, or even in the present, but also the change of God in the past. Okay. You think about that, and I'll think about it too. So, that's the parts that, now we're getting into parts that I can't really talk about anymore because I don't know. But let's go back now and talk about the spiritual service life that a person does have. So they go on for, literally, in terms of their recognition of time, hundreds and hundreds of years. It probably averages close to 1,000 years. I know it's a long time for us to perceive this. This is their life, though. And it's in this joyous creation that they exist for most of that period of time. So spiritual service in the mental world is so far beyond spiritual service in the astral world, because you're in this state of joy and many times bliss. And then there's another thing that's developing while you're in that state, and that's a thing called a sense of buddhi. Yeah, it's like the famous arhat and great teacher, the Buddha. Buddhi. What is a sense of buddhi? Well, that's senses in a body beyond the monastic. Those are developed further during the time of awake and conscious co-serving mental, lower mental life. You develop these senses in the three lower parts of the Buddhic body. And the most important thing is you unify them. You get them to actually work together. They can work completely independent, unlike other senses in other bodies, perfectly. They can work perfectly independently. Other senses in lower bodies cannot work very well at all when they're separated. These can, but they work even better when you create with them by joining them together. Then you're starting to become a superhuman at that point. And you're not, so while you're going back to being your soul, you're also helping your soul to advance itself into the superhuman kingdom, which is called the liberated soul, where it's not found in a very small location in the higher mental world. It's actually going to ascend into this buddhic dimension and use these buddhic senses that you're building a lot of the time while you're serving in the mental world. So mental world service creates buddhic senses, okay? There are two categories of buddhic senses. One of them, you could say, maybe I'm using right now. And a buddhic sense that is considered a sense of service to those in the physical or astral world, I assume I'm speaking mostly to those who are physically alive right now. That sense is built up more individually. And it doesn't build necessarily a collective Buddhic body or sense that the soul can live in. But it is an important service. And it allows someone who is using it to do some pretty important teaching kinds of things and creative kinds of things that seem superhuman to others who might be watching it. But then there's a greater sense that can be developed, which is developed while you're doing the present and future living in the lower monastic world. I hope I'm not losing you on this. Stay with me on it. And so from the, let's start over again. From the past Akashic and helping someone while they're coming out of the Akashic, you build isolated Buddhic sense, which I could be using as an example right now, or someone else could. And then there's another kind of Buddhic sense that's unified, that comes from living in the monastic world, in the present and future sense, and creating the virtual scenarios and all the stuff I talked about. And then also possibly this thing, and I don't completely comprehend, about experiencing God changing in the past and all that, everything, the whole thing. That develops the Buddhic senses, but in a unified way. And that allows then eventually, the soul to move into the Buddhic realm rather than the human soul, which will become a superhuman soul. And you become be considered to be like a master. This is what people call a master of the ageless wisdom, master of this or that. But it's a being who's not any longer human, is what it really is, because all the senses in the human bodies, the mental, the astral, and the physical, have become one sense. There aren't any more separated bodies, there's no more separated senses, just you have one sense. That sense is of everything in those three lower worlds happening as a part of God. That's your sense. And you can co-create with it as you choose. You have great abilities. And you can know what's happening in one part and the other part at the same time. So a master would know what's happening in the mental world while at the same exact time they would know what's happening in the physical and the astral world. And it could be any one of the sub-worlds, all of them together collectively. Think about it. It's pretty wild, huh? Okay. So those are the two things that are being developed, these two kinds of Buddhic senses. And they're both very, very important to develop. They provide remarkable experiences. The first kind of Buddhic sense develops periods of joy with periods of non-joy. And sometimes you suffer during the periods of non-joy. So it's kind of like a balancing thing. And then if you get to the second part, or when you get to the second part, you reach a point where the joy is gone and the suffering's gone and you're in a state of bliss. Now, what is a state of bliss? A state of bliss is kind of like that love I was talking about between the people who are fully awake and living in the present and the future and maybe in the past as well, all at the same time together and have this enormous love for themselves and for God. That's a state of bliss. The bliss is like a state in which there is no more suffering. There is no more sense of up and down. There is no more of the human, more negative experiences that we all suffer from to some extent. And you don't have to suffer anymore, because suffering is needed so that you can understand the suffering of others. But once you have complete wisdom and complete understanding of the three lower worlds, you don't need to suffer, because you have complete understanding of the suffering of others, as well as the ways of solving it for those others, if they choose to listen to whatever you teach or to involve themselves in whatever you create. But remember, it's a choice. It's the choice of those. Nothing's forced. And consequently, very few people do choose, even when it's available to them. That's unfortunate, isn't it? Okay. So, how far out are we? Well, this is pretty far out there. This is an esoteric program today for sure. But these things, I don't think you're going to be able to find the nitty-gritty kind of experiences I'm describing to you if you read about this. It's available, but very, very, very abstract, and sometimes excessively mystical. So that you really, it almost sounds like poetry rather than an explanation of anything. That's how I found it. Now maybe others find some of those kinds of things helpful. And if they do, please read them. You know, read them even if you don't find them helpful, because you might find that you could understand them better after you've heard some of the stuff I've talked about. You can put them together and it might make more sense to you. Okay, so what is the ultimate goal then of a spiritual life mentally for a person? Well, the ultimate goal isn't really to develop the Buddha body, even though I went through about 5 or 10 minutes of that. But the ultimate goal is to rejoin with the soul. And the rejoining with the soul is necessary because the soul needs the form parts of existence that you did in service to add to itself. All the negative stuff in the garbage you did, and I did, and everybody else, gone. The only thing that lasts forever, and that becomes part of our soul as well, are those things that are created in light, or virtue. Virtue is light in form. And everything else, gone. Yes, there's karma, and yes, you have to go through that and rechange the situations, etc., as best as possible. But nothing remains in memory, nothing remains in future existence. Now you can say, well, what about those evil folks who even go to the middle world? Don't they reincarnate and they come back and do all kinds of more evil stuff? Yeah, they can grow in darkness and separate themselves further and further from their creator and all those who are doing the same, who are close to their creator. But eventually, their life becomes less and less meaningful, and eventually they destroy themselves. They may destroy parts of the form part of the world, too, but they do destroy themselves, and then they have to start all over again, going through terrible, terrible experiences, millions of years possibly, to get back to just being a human, and believe it or not, they all, best as I understand, will come back enough times to rejoin with a soul. It won't be the soul they had before, but another soul, human soul. And so eventually they get out of it too. But it's a long, long journey of terrible things. But for the rest of us, we're going back to our souls. And so getting there is an interesting process. There are several possibilities. The best I'm going to start with first. Because this really is like the end of this, I think, the end of the trip of service in the mental world is becoming your soul, rejoining your soul in the mental world. The best way to do that is fully consciously. You don't fall asleep. You don't forget anything. You don't lose any aspect of your mental life. Now, the way you achieve that, this is the problem here. The way you achieve that is during the time that you are serving, 60% of the time, you have to be creating huge amounts, which is a lot, of mental virtue with all those that you are co-serving with while you're in all three parts of time. Now, this is not just when you're serving people in the Akasha. That's a sideline almost compared to the big thing, big picture. So you have to get past the 60% mark. And you might say, well, that sounds, well, if you're doing all these cool things, what's the problem? Well, there's a seductive issue. Remember I said that when you have these experiences, you have joy, which is a good thing, but you also have suffering. And a lot of people don't get to 50% and they can't get to the 60 because there is this equal balance bouncing back and forth that they experience suffering for others. And the suffering that they experience for others while they're in the service in the mental, higher mental world actually can keep them from reaching the 60% goal. If they can maintain the 60% goal or greater, they become their soul fully conscious. They lose absolutely nothing. It's just that they and their soul become one in the higher mental world. They're literally the lower mental body dissolves away, and they just are their soul. And now they have this incredibly increased awareness and consciousness on a conceptual level of where their soul is. That's the most beautiful way to join your soul. It is not the majority of the people who serve in the mental world that reach that. The ones who get there and serve first and longest do. But the ones who have to go through extended periods of time attempting to get rid of their egotism and the Akashic elements dominate their life in their lower, in the younger years that they're there, they have a hard time reaching the 60% level. Those people, unfortunately, fall asleep. Now, what happens if they fall asleep? Okay, I fall asleep every night, big deal. But when they fall asleep, they lose some of the continuity of all the connections and all the joy that they had with all those people that they were having it for hundreds and hundreds of years, maybe 1,000 years, in the virtual and present realities that I talked about. They lose that. And that's a big loss, really. So when they go to rejoin their soul, their sense of completeness is not there. And it affects their next incarnation. Their next incarnation can be contaminated still by the suffering and the loss of the continual joy, which could be bliss. And they may have a more morose personality that is contaminated by the fact that they have to reform energy, which is makes up the personality, from the lower mental world. That's what the personality exists in. And some of that energy is attracted back to the last thoughts and feelings. Well, they're not really feelings, but the thoughts and thoughts about feelings that they had while they were mentally alive. And so this can be a negative effect for their next incarnation. It's still great. They're going to go back to being their soul. I don't want you to think that's going to be missing. But it's like you have a big memory hole. And you don't have that joy of experience that you could have by being complete. And so if you're going to go through this, and I don't know how many people will go to the full level that are listening, but it's way better to work on getting over your egotism now and your arrogance. And develop humility now. If you're humble now while you're physically alive, your chances of fully joining with your soul in a conscious way are way, way higher. Way, way higher. This is the time to do it now. Because then when you come back in your next life, you will be way ahead and you won't have this dark cloud around you, which many people do. Vast number. So if this is something that if you serve in this lifetime, and then especially going on and serving next and continue, your service only grows. And the reward is your next incarnation will be great. If you don't do that, I guarantee if you were capable of doing it, you're going to have a miserable next life. Even though you may be a spiritually disciplined person or try to be, it'll be very difficult for you because you carry with us these holes. And holes create doubts. And the doubts produce illusions. And God's harder to understand and see. You want to have, believe me, I want to have, what these few have told me about as that final experience of having all of time and all of God's time as your experience. Because that stays with you. And it fills you up in a way that you can't get in any other. And it's what makes your next lifetime really, really great, apparently, even though I can't fully explain it at this point. Okay, so now what about the people who really don't even get that far? What about people who burn out some of their lower mental senses and are stuck in an Akasha and they never have a mental life on one or more of the subworlds and they're really missing, they virtually have no service life? What happens to them? Well, that's a considered more or less a failed personality, but it still did some good things. The good things still go on to exist in the soul. The person still wakes up as their soul, but their personality is gone. And it isn't gone in a sense like you feel as though something died. You don't feel like you've lost anything. You feel like you gained something. Because you wake up being a soul, which is way greater than the personality. So as far as you're concerned, this is a good deal. The personality, though, being gone, the way you lose is that if you could have kept the personality in a 60% or more positive, enlightened condition, that those parts would have remained in your next lifetime. And you would remember the prior lifetime. And you would be able to use it as a direct understanding of problems and karmic issues that come up, both in helping the self for yourself and those of others, while you're both physically alive and astrally alive. So it's a huge improvement if you can do that. Well, you know what? I'm out of time. I didn't take any break in the middle of the show either, you know, figure what the heck. Let's see, what else do I have to mention to you? Oh, I just wanted to tell you that pain-free, we're just a couple of weeks away, and this stuff is amazing. So get ready to try to get some if you can. And if you have a chance, contact Kavita at Nova Home Loans, 480-430-6911. She said, I met with her a few days ago, and she said, if you call from out of state, she can help you. Not through her bank, not from Nova, but through another bank, to work with you to help you get green loans where you're upside down, where you can't, you're underwater. And normally you would not be able to get out of it. You might have to lose your house or whatever. This is a way for you to get to fix up the house, lower your power bills, and do all kinds of things. At the same time, save your house. Because you get a wider range of loan if you do it that way. Give it a shot. Call her, 480-430-6911. And if you've been kind of sitting on the fence in that one, give her a call. You get nothing to lose. There's no pressure. This isn't like a sales kind of thing. She's there to help. That's what she does. Okay? Okay, so I hope that this show tonight has really made some difference for all of you out there. I've been talking about these really esoteric subjects. I sometimes wonder. Let me know. Send me an email or you can call me or whatever. And let me know how it went, if you really understand it. If you're still having trouble, most of what I talked about, again, more in conceptual format, is in Life and Meaning, the big textbook, the one that weighs 4 pounds and you can use it to weightlift with. That in that book, there's a whole bunch of material there that goes into explanations on a conceptual level that'll help you to understand this part better. So you can get that book and read about it, and that may fill in the gaps. Okay, well, we're out of time, and until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.